This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Another year, another $3 billion.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The world's airlines thought this might be the year of progress, of making the hole smaller. But the industry's trade group says with fuel prices the way they are, you can pretty much chalk up another $3 billion in losses. Airlines lost $3.2 billion last year. Fuel costs are expected to eat up more than a quarter of the airlines' budgets. The nation's 14,000 air traffic controllers are arguing with their employer, the Federal Aviation Administration. Today's the deadline for Congress to decide if it should get involved in this. Lisa Roth has more.
Nobody expects a repeat of 1981.
If they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
That's when Ronald Reagan fired 11,000 air traffic controllers for walking off the job. But the FAA says it can't afford salaries that average above $100,000 a year. It needs the cash to upgrade the air traffic control system. The controllers say they might as well retire. The new contract pays so little. Industry consultant Hans Weber says the FAA is finally catching up with the times.
We're seeing the painful adjustment in the public sector that the private sector has gone through to a much larger extent over the last 4 or 5 years.
If Congress does nothing, the FAA's last offer automatically takes effect. That's a two-tiered plan which pays new hires less. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
June 5, 1981, the world's first AIDS case was diagnosed. Since then, 25 million people have died from the disease, and billions of dollars have been spent. From the health desk at WGBH, Helen Palmer looks to the future.
Within the next 15 years, HIV/AIDS is expected to infect 100 million people, mostly in the developing world. $8 billion was spent to slow its spread last year, but experts say at least $20 billion needed annually. International donors like the U.S. will give most of that, but Paul DeLay of UNAIDS says some countries need to do more.
China, India clearly could do more financially.
The epidemic's exploding in Asia. India already has 1 in 8 cases. Preventing infection would be much cheaper than treating the disease. But cultural factors like the status of women and some donors' refusal to promote condoms or clean needles for drug addicts mean the virus is out of control. One key stakeholder is stepping in to help, though.
The business sector as a whole can pretty much make anything happen that it wants to.
Priya Berry of the Global Business Coalition on HIV/AIDS says mining companies in Africa proved the cash value of testing and treating workers. Now the coalition's 200 members are using their skills to expand services in the developing world, and they're raising cash through the Product Red campaign.
Product Red has raised, in 2 short months, over $10 million. That's a lot of money.
Gap, Motorola, American Express, Converse, they're all marketing red-themed products, and 40% of the sales price goes to the UN's AIDS Fund. Berry says fighting AIDS is not only the moral thing for business to do, it helps ensure productivity and healthy consumers. In Boston, I'm Helen Palmer for Marketplace.
And you're listening to Marketplace. If we say words like on the air, the FCC can fine us. This week, the House votes on a bill that would increase those fines tenfold. And broadcasters are ready to do battle on this. Here's Jeff Tyler.
Instead of butting heads with Congress, the TV networks have taken their fight to court. They argue the Federal Communications Commission has no constitutional authority to levy indecency fines. The Supreme Court made the FCC guardians of virtue in 1978. Overturning that decision will be expensive.
That's been one of the arguments about not going to court before, is that it was essentially cheaper to deal with the fines, not anymore.
That's Variety reporter Bill Triplett. If the court case is unsuccessful, he says most of the proposed $325,000 fines won't target massive media companies.
Ultimately, it will be the individual broadcast stations, because they're the ones that actually draw the fines.
A court decision is expected at the earliest by the end of the year. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
From American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By the Medtronic Foundation, celebrating women and women's health. Information and health resources on women's health issues available at womenshealth.gov. And by The Economist magazine, which not only tells you what's happening each week, but why. The Economist, at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Internet phone provider Vonage has a bit of a PR problem. First, the company recommended that its own customers buy shares when it went public last month. The stock immediately tanked and has lost almost a third of its value. But Vonage said folks would still have to follow through on their promise to buy the stock. Now those customers are suing. Newsweek's Alan Sloan is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Scott.
Isn't it a little unusual to ask your customers to buy shares of your stock?
Well, in the case we're talking about, I think Vonage would argue that they were permitting their customers to buy stock, and they were doing them a favor and trying to bind them closer to the company by letting them own a piece of the action and presumably profit from the pop in price that an IPO is supposed to get.
Some favor.
Well, you know, if the stock had gone up 30% instead of down 30%, we'd be having a different conversation.
Why do you think the stock did tank so quickly?
Well, there are two possibilities. One is that the market just changed. The other possibility is that somebody actually went and read the stock offering documents, which I did after the offering started falling apart, but before it came out.
And what did you find?
Well, what you find is that this company, which has a great name and an image and a pioneer, it's running through cash at an enormous rate with enormous marketing expenses, and it really needed a whole slug of money to keep from running out of cash. Now, I'd like to think that this happened because of some sort of rational analysis. I suspect that what happened is that a lot of people buy these IPOs assuming that they'll run up and, you know, they can make a quick buck. But the minute it starts to falter, people just dump it, cut their losses short, and run. So instead of, like, say, the Google IPO, which ran up and ran up and ran up and had a momentum of its own, this one ran down and ran down and ran down and had a negative momentum of its own.
So when a company says, here, buy our stock, and then it goes directly in the toilet, what responsibility, if any, does the company have for letting these people off the hook?
Well, I suspect that's going to be litigated. Something like $75 million of the $500 million and change that was raised in this IPO was apparently bought by customers of Vonage. So I don't know how many of them have paid, how many of them intend to pay, what Vonage is going to do to enforce payment if they don't pay. And this, by the way, is another example of the risk actually companies run by appealing to their customers, because if the IPO goes bad and the customers don't want to pay, you've got a real mess, because you may have to sue your own customers, which is generally not good for making them customers.
Alan Sloan is the Wall Street editor for Newsweek in Los Angeles. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.